Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
You had a pretty good couple of days, didn't you?
What do you mean?
I mean, you went to go see the Star Trek movie, and I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah. Are you going? You're going soon, right?
I'm going to go see it after we record this episode.
Nice. We should record a special spoilerific Greatest Gen episode about the new movie.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's not often that we have a new movie to spoilify.
Yeah. It's about time we get around to spoiling something made within the last 20 years.
Here's my proposal. We do it. Okay. We release the episode on like a Friday, like a day that we wouldn't have a normal episode, so it doesn't affect our regularly scheduled podcast. And everybody should know that it will be spoilerific. So if you care about that, you know, you've been warned.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to it if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we're running into this conflict with a few of our viewers where we're like, if you don't like it, go listen to something else.
In fact, it's easier not to listen to our show than to listen.
We're doing everything we can to prevent new listeners. So.
We hugely appreciate all the listeners we do have. That's not to imply that we don't.
Right. What do you say we get into it, Ben?
You mean into a pack of cards?
Yes.
The game is five cards stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Order this in just the cards, data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Yeah, I just felt like we haven't opened any in a while, so.
Especially after talking to Biff on the Twitters.
Yeah, I really want to find a Jaeger in here. I have a card for an episode called Lessons. Oh, this is that one where he plays piano and flute with the hot music officer. Remember that episode?
Yes.
Wish I didn't, but I do.
Whenever I open a pack of cards, I flip through them as fast as possible to see if there's an autograph in there.
If there's a Jaeger?
Yeah, to the exclusion of all other concerns.
I kind of like the little reveal.
I got a weird signature card in here. It feels like sort of double thickness.
You have a signature card?
Well, it's not like the signature cards we've seen before. It looks like an episode card.
Huh.
But it's got a gold signature on it.
What?
Yeah. It's Juan Ortiz's signature, who is the designer of all of these cards. It's like double thickness of the standard card, and it's got a embossed gold signature. It's for the episode Contagion.
Dang.
Yeah, it's stamped number 47 of 125, so this is a limited edition.
Man, you get all the cool cards.
I know.
I mean, I still got my George Baxter, but...
Dude, I'd trade you a Contagion for a George Baxter.
No, you wouldn't. That would be madness. My next card is the Nth Degree. Oh, no, this is that one where Barkley gets all super smart.
Oh.
You remember right, that episode?
They hook him up to the static discharge machine.
Yeah, he's got the lasers going into his brain.
Yeah, that's fun.
Chain of Command Part 2. Wap, 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 wap.
Aren't you excited for the Barkley episodes?
I'm more excited for Chain of Command Parts 1 and 2. You remember those episodes?
Is that when the Enterprise gets a different captain? And he's a crotchety old man?
It might be that, but it's also the one where Picard is like in the hands of the Cardassians and is getting tortured and interviewed.
Right. Right. All he has to do is say how many lights there are.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has such a hard time with that.
He's a man of principle.
Yeah.
Let's see. Coming of Age. That's that one where Remick was tearing the ship apart.
That's right.
No Quagmire on the card. It's just it's Wesley and the Enterprise. And my last one is Night Terrors, which is, I think, the one where Troy is having the, like... It's another one where the ship is stuck and they can't unstick it.
Yeah, it's
and then,
stuck
like,
in the mud.
Troy's having special dreams about how to unstick it.
Special dreams. Personal dreams. So I got the Contagion card, the special edition, and then I got the Vengeance Factor, which is a really cool picture of Riker. He looks like he's on the cover of a romance novel.
I think I have the Vengeance Factor.
Yeah.
Do I not?
I got that one, Sins of the Father, with a great picture of Worf on it, Reunion, and Firstborn. So sort of a Klingon-heavy pack I got here.
Yeah.
Gotta say. Pretty good pack for me.
Solid pack, bro. Well, should we get into an episode?
Yeah, let's hit it.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
It's season 3, episode 7, The Enemy. This is one of those episodes that starts with like a pure cold open.
Yeah, this is like one of the best cold opens we have yet seen.
Yeah, occasionally you get the ship in orbit and you get a captain's log sort of setting the scene. In this episode, you get a fade up and we are on basically Planet Anybody Canyon.
We're on LV-426 from the Alien films.
Totally.
And speaking of cold opens, Adam.
Oh, yeah. Really excited for our first beer sponsorship, Ben.
Yeah, we've had tequila. Why not beer? So, yeah, and this is also, it's also interesting because they say, like, if Data was down here, he'd be getting scrambled by all the electromagnetic activity, which I thought was cool because there's definitely been times when Data could beam down because it would be hazardous for anybody else.
Yeah.
This is a time where they can beam down, but not Data.
Yeah. It's a convenient device.
So they are, they're groping around. It's Geordi, Riker, and Worf. And they've picked up a signal from a distress signal from a Romulan craft. Riker's like on the timer because they have a window, and if they don't beam back before this window closes, the storm is going to get too intense, and the transporter beam, even with the pattern enhancer that they've beamed down with, is just not going to cut it. So, stakes is high, and there's a clock running. This is not a planet that has a great deal of vegetation or any life to speak of, but Geordi manages to slip on a banana peel and go down a hole.
Geordi chooses not to do the front flip that crew members typically choose when falling in holes. He goes straight down.
Yeah. There's a lot of deep well-like holes on planets in the Star Trek universe, aren't there?
Yeah.
Just like vertical sides that you can't grab anything on. And the storm is like whipping up, and Riker and Worf find a passed out Romulan. Or specifically Worf does, right?
Yeah, and look, like they choose to split up in this giant storm. And this is part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, they can't see each other barely. They can't hear each other at all. Is the move really to split up to do more damage?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the other thing is their tricorders have like a very limited range. Like, they don't have any way to find each other. It's not like they have their digital string tied around their waist to keep them together. And unclear, like, what Geordi was off looking for, because they find some busted up ship parts, and then they keep looking, and Worf finds a passed out Romulan and is checking to see if the guy has a pulse when he wakes up, sees a Klingon looming over him, and goes for Worf's throat. And Worf does an awesome, like claw move on the guy.
Yeah, the five-finger exploding palm.
Yeah, it's like Worf is confident enough that this guy is not going to crush his windpipe that he, like, really winds up on this. And
yeah,
and then just, like, clocks the dude in the face, causing him to pass out anew. And he and Riker schlep the guy over to the beam-down site and discover that Geordi is nowhere to be found.
4 minutes to beam up!
Where is he?
Yeah, and this window is closing. Like, they either beam up now or they stay down for the duration. And Worf and Riker have that moment where Riker's like, we gotta get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And Worf's like, seriously? And Riker's like, seriously. All this is said non-verbally, mind you. This mm-hmm. is my summary of that moment.
Oh, so we can't drop in the clip of them going, seriously? Seriously? Yeah. Seriously?
Are you for real?
Dude.
Yeah, I'm for real.
Dude, are you fucking serious right now? They beam up to the transporter room, and a bunch of doctors come in with, like, a floato gurney, which is a strange choice because they often beam directly to six bay.
Right.
But this time they don't. Who knows why?
Well, O'Brien doesn't get paid if you beam them directly to sick bay.
Oh, he's like a flight attendant where...
Yeah, he goes to the transporter room for a very specific reason.
Yeah.
So Colum can get a paycheck.
Yeah. They're only technically on the clock when they're in air.
Right.
Yeah, so they get this Romulan up there, and he's pretty whooped. And we cut back down to the planet, and Geordi is just down in the bottom of this hole, sitting in a puddle, screaming for Worf. And ain't nobody going to come help him.
I mean, and here we are presented with our A story. It's sort of Geordi LaForge as Rambo in the movie First Blood.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to improvise some instruments and weapons. He's got to figure out a way to survive down at the bottom of this hole and possibly get out of it. And he does some pretty cool stuff in the process.
Totally. Like, the like, tradecraft shit that Geordi does in this episode is excellent.
Yeah.
The like, it's like, you know, Jake Gittes doing detective stuff in Chinatown or Rambo doing field traps in First Blood. Like, it's so cool. Like, you totally go into the universe that, okay, he's got a phaser that still works. He has a tricorder that doesn't really work. He's got a visor where he can do some, like, light metallurgy. Like, what can he do in this hole? And so what he does is he finds some iron-rich rocks, digs a trench in the mud, fills the rocks into it, and uses that as a mold to make, like, hand spikes that he uses to, like, claw his way up the side of this hole.
Yeah.
Fucking rad.
Have you ever used that thing at the gym where it's like sticks and holes and you've got to like pull yourself up the side of a thing?
I don't go to gyms.
I don't know what that thing is called, but it takes a lot of upper body strength to do that.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And the length of this hole is... You never get a really good look at how deep it is, but it looks...
Got to be like 25 or 30 feet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Geordi's jacked.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that he is from this scene.
Yeah, like you don't, like those uniforms kind of hide it, but I think Geordi might be totally shredded.
I think he's also got to be super pissed that he's ruined his $3,000 suit. Like, all I could think about when he fell into that mud was, ooh,
yeah.
Boy, like, why couldn't it have been one of the old... the old uniform jobs.
Right. Yeah, and LeVar Burton was probably like, fuck, after this, they're probably going to put me back in one of those old uniforms.
Gross. Yeah, he's got to wear this thing like a wetsuit the rest of the time, too. That can't be comfortable as an actor. Wearing wet wool.
No.
Wet wool gabardine. Have you ever, like, have you ever jumped into the ocean wearing a suit or anything, Ben?
No, I typically have suits that I wouldn't sacrifice in that way. But
yeah.
One time, I had a suit that was a suit that I knew that I didn't particularly care for anymore, and was kind of ready to get rid of it. And I was working on season...
It was made by JNCO Jeans.
It's actually Dolce & Gabbana, and I got it at like a sample sale for very cheap. But we were shooting season 2 of Put This On, and one of our sponsors was a kefir company, which is that yogurt drink. And the host of the show, Jesse Thorne, who is also the proprietor of MaximumFun.org, our network, happens to be the same suit size as me. So he put this suit on, and we shot a little commercial for this kefir where he dumps a bunch of bottles of it on his head while talking about the merits of kefir.
Just to be clear, is that how you're supposed to consume kefir? Transdermally?
That's the only thing you can take away from this commercial.
Uh-huh.
But then we put the suit in like a box, and Jesse and I left to go shoot the rest of the show, and so we were going to be out of town for like 2 weeks. And we got back, and I found that box like in the back of a downstairs room in our apartment. And
oh.
I was like, you didn't send this? It's full of yogurt and a suit. It was something I felt very guilty about sending to somebody and asking them to clean at that point.
And so you did or you didn't?
We did. And
Ben.
That suit hangs in my closet to this day. The place cleaned the shit out of it.
Wow. I got to level with you. I would have thrown that suit in the garbage rather than send it to some poor cleaner to have them deal with it.
This is one of the best Star Trek stories we've ever told.
Let us edit all of that out.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet is based. Have you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Anyways, Geordi is totally filthy, but is busy crafting tools that gets him up out of this hole.
Yeah, and he gets to the surface and he's like kind of scrambling around on the surface of this planet. But he knows full well that he missed the window. So it's a little unclear like why he is moving around. Like, I kind of feel like he should not be moving around. He should be like sticking in one spot. You know, like when you're, you know, a little kid and you get lost in an amusement park, you're supposed to stay in the same place.
Yeah, that is the rule. I think he knows that no matter what, he's got to get out of the hole.
Yeah.
All other concerns after that are just kind of secondary.
Fair enough. But it's not long before young Wesley Crusher.
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
The boy genius devises a way to get Geordi to converge on a specific spot, which is that they're going to rig up a probe with a neutrino beam that's going to shoot into the sky. And Geordi will be able to see that with his visor. And he'll be able to go over to the probe and like cause it to modulate its signal or whatever, bleep and blorp, and they'll beam him up or whatever.
Yeah, it's sort of the equivalent of like a Klieg light outside of a movie premiere. Like to Geordi, he's seeing this giant beam shoot up. Even in this crazy storm, he's able to see it. And so there's no other thing that it could be besides something from the Enterprise. This is what Wesley posits.
Yeah. So back aboard the ship, the doctor, whose hair is like 12 inches longer than the last time we saw it. I don't know if that happened in this episode or a previous episode, but I definitely noticed it here. Like, she had like a really specific length of hair when this season started, and now she's just like full-blown Beverly Crusher hair.
Yeah, this show more and more is not built for the binge that we're giving it. And all of these continuity things are really coming to the surface.
Yeah,
week
I guess
to week.
I guess maybe if you were watching these episodes once a week, you might not notice a massive amount of growth in Beverly's hair, but
which is one of the reasons you watch a show like this.
Well, this is a Star Trek Haircast, Adam. It is one of the only reasons we watch a show like this.
It's in the title.
So she's working hard on fixing up the Romulan that they brought back from the service, and they get him talking for a second, and he's like,
"I am alone.
I will not answer any questions.
But he's in rough shape, and they need to give him a blood transfusion, but obviously this being a Federation starship, they've got a relative paucity of Romulans in the crew. So they've got to do blood tests for everybody on the ship to see who can provide a blood transfusion. And comes back that the only person on board that can do it is Worf. And Worf is not super into the idea.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurseth the disease.
No, not at all. And one of the people that Worf decides to chat up, given this decision he's got to make, is Riker.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes in the episode is Worf begins by saying, no, like, actually, fuck that and fuck you for even asking. Like,
right.
There's no way I'm sticking my blood into that guy and saving his life. Like, forget it. We're going to let him die. So he rolls into Riker's room just to talk things over. He's a good guy to talk to.
Yeah.
And Riker appears to be mid-bender.
You are busy. Forgive my intrusion.
Yeah.
Because this is now the second straight episode where it's conceivable that Riker could lose crew members.
Yeah.
Like crew members who he's close to.
Totally.
And the advice that Riker gives Worf at this moment is like, look, man, I'm not going to tell you what you need to do. Like, only you can come to a decision that you can live with. But, like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
You may be a rough and tumble Klingon warrior guy, but around here we don't merely let people die.
Right. And
so
this,
maybe think it over.
This dude didn't personally kill your family. Like,
right.
You can't hold every Romulan living responsible for something horrible that happened back in the day, which is a pretty solid point, right? Like,
that's Kevin Uxbridge revenge right there.
Worf just goes like, first I will kill all Romulans, then I will fuck an inflated doll.
Captain Picard, I've got to put all of my fluids into that Romulan. Every single fluid I have must fill that Romulan's veins until he's positively bursting with my fluids. And so he sort of goes around the horn a little bit and considers his options. And Beverly, toward the end, does some super manipulative shit, which is like, hey, Worf, you better come down to sickbay because this guy's about to die and you should probably watch, which I thought was super fucked up.
Yeah, I understand why that's where she's coming from, but I feel like it's probably a misfire with Worf, given his specific personal experience with this character, who woke up, looked at Worf, and attempted to strangle him to death.
Yeah.
I mean, Worf has his bad past with the Romulans, but he also has this guy specifically tried to kill him to think about. And
not only that, he totally big dogs him in sickbay. Like, Worf goes to see him, and the Romulans, like,
I would rather die than pollute my body with Klingon filth.
Like, fuck you 1,000 times, peace out. And then he flatlines.
Yeah.
Which was sort of a badass way to go out.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Worf was pretty badass, too. Like, he has a lot of mealy-mouthed liberals trying to tell him what to do.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, fuck that. Like, I don't fuck with this guy at all. I'm not saving his life. Even if it's the big man thing to do, I'm not doing it.
This was one of those scenes in an episode I barely remembered that, like, I remember differently. I thought for sure that Worf gave him blood as sort of a revenge move.
Or, like, stick it to him.
Yeah, and so when this Romulan died, it really surprised me.
Yeah. Big twist in your memory.
Yeah, headcanon twist.
So, down on the surface, Geordi has finally spotted the neutrino beam, and there's a pretty funny line here. Goes, Wesley Crusher. And he starts walking toward it, and he's distracted by the fact that there's a beam, so he doesn't notice that a Romulan is coming up behind him to bop him on the head. So he wakes up, and this Romulan is like leering over him with a disruptor and preening at the fact that he has taken Geordi prisoner. And Geordi is like very quickly just like just minimizing this Romulan's achievement. He's like, oh, great. So you and I are the only two people on the planet and I'm your prisoner. How proud you must be. Pretty fun.
Yeah, there's a couple of big doggings happening here.
Yes.
In this episode. There's the sick Romulan on the Enterprise moving to Big Dog Worf. And then there's another sick Romulan on the planet surface big dogging Geordi.
Yeah. But I think Geordi is big dogging back. Like, he's giving as good as he's getting. They are enemies by affiliation, but they have to work together to get off of this planet because the Romulans people are not aware of the situation, and the Enterprise has put something in place that can help them beam up. But
right.
The Romulan doesn't love the idea of becoming Geordi's prisoner and has to really be talked into it. Like, it's going to be us both dying or you becoming my prisoner. So, like, what principles are you standing on here? Like, what are the stakes for you? And
right.
And that's, like, a pretty interesting argument Geordi makes. Like there are probably situations that Geordi would choose to die rather than go into Romulan hands. And he acknowledges that that's probably true of this guy. And if what they were up to, which is, like, pretty suspicious because they're in Federation space, but if whatever they were up to wasn't such a big deal that he can become a Federation prisoner, like, maybe he should think about it rationally and on those terms.
Geordi is speaking rationally to someone who is, like, spazzing out and sweating and not really acting like someone who can process that information.
Right.
In a good way.
Yeah, like, he's, like, real methy in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah.
Like, Geordi is the proprietor of a motel, and this guy hasn't paid his room bill in a couple of days, and Geordi is wise to what's going on.
Yeah.
But also knows that this guy has enough of a stash that he could make Geordi whole. Is that a good metaphor?
Yeah, that's great.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
So the other thing is that the, like, environment on this planet is wreaking havoc on their systems, and Geordi is going blind real quickly. And the Romulan is losing his ability to walk real quickly. So
yeah, it's given off radiation, right?
Yeah.
Radiation of the type that's making the Romulan all spazzy and is taking away really the only thing that Geordi can use to save their lives down there.
Yeah,
and that's
it's
scary. As soon as Geordi's lights go out, like,
it's a type of radiation that scientists have called MacGuffin radiation.
Indeed.
The same type of radiation they had on that planet in Ensigns of Command.
Right.
The kind of radiation that has a very specific effect that moves the plot forward.
Yes, it can only be detected by using tricortisone.
Yeah.
So once we remove one conflict, we have to replace it with something else, right? And
sure.
So the introduced conflict is now a Romulan ship is on its way because they attempted to communicate with the now dead Romulan.
Right.
And are like, oh, what the hell happened to that guy? Well, before he gets found, we better go hustle him off of that planet. But the Enterprise is in orbit, and it intercepts that message, and now shit is going down.
Yeah. This is Commander Tomalak of the Romulan Empire, and he is coming in hot, demanding that they, you know, turn over the guy to them by meeting up in the neutral zone. Picard is insistent that Tomalak's ship not enter Federation space, and Tomalak is doing a lot of excellent Romulaning around where he, you know, every inconsistency has, like, an excellent explanation, like, oh, well, we wouldn't have been there if we'd known there was a Federation ship there. We would never want to start a conflict of any kind.
He's sort of only vaguely threatening, which I think makes him an effective character. He's unlike anyone we've met before.
Always a chess game with the Romulans.
He really likes that close-up FaceTime. You ever talk to someone on FaceTime and they hold the phone just way too close to their face?
Yeah.
That's Tomalak for you right there.
Yeah, it's a wide-ass lens on FaceTime. You don't want that shit that close to your face.
He's got the real meat beard look going, too. It's shot a little low.
Mm-hmm. He is a more fully fleshed out Romulan character than we've ever had. And that includes the two Romulans that we meet, you know, on the planet surface and in Six Bay. Like, they are pretty one note characters, like just kind of menacing bad guy characters. Tomalak is great. Like, he's a really fun character to watch. And an excellent antagonist for Picard, who is like a real plain dealer and doesn't really put up with bullshit. And Tomalak is like so skilled at throwing bullshit down all over the place.
Yeah, Tomalak is like wearing a suit of bullshit. So the Enterprise is dealing with this growing concern in orbit. So back on the planet surface, with a newly blind Geordi, he's down there with this Backroom character. Backroom, who has no legs, Geordi, who has no eyes. They've got to figure out a way out of this cave into this signal that Wesley set up.
Right. Since Geordi's visor isn't working, they have to rig it up in a way where they can kind of use it as like a compass to find the neutrino fountain. And
I didn't really expect Geordi to go through stages of grief the way he did. Like, it really felt like he was ready to die as soon as he lost his eyesight.
Yeah. I mean, and they have an interesting conversation about that, too. Like, the Romulan is really surprised that his parents allowed him to live past infancy with a crippling disability like blindness.
No wonder your race is weak. You waste time and resources on defective children.
That's some interesting world building, you know? Like, the Romulans do not have the same kind of values surrounding their children as members of the Federation, or at least humans.
It's amazing how much world building you can do with a single line. Like, that says so much about a culture with a single line of dialogue.
Totally. And he's real, like, the actor really, like, sold the shit out of it too. Like, he's really like perplexed and kind of disgusted that somebody would be allowed to live that was blind.
Yeah, and he's also like the hero of the moment. He's like, fuck this, Geordi. Like, I actually intend to survive.
Yeah.
If you're just gonna be a little whiny bitch, like, give me your tricorder and I'll try figuring it out. Or maybe you could help, you know, like, you could talk me through it.
Yeah,
because I've got some good eyes here.
Yeah, and I've never used your strange Federation technology, so I could use an expert, and they wind up forming a team, and they make it to the thing, and they basically get beamed up just in time to stop the Enterprise and the Romulan warbird from start lighting each other up. It's real tense because like they're close enough to lighting each other up that Picard has to like tell Tomalak very specifically, I am lowering my shield so that I can beam up your guy and my guy, and please don't destroy my ship.
Yeah.
Like, please be cool.
Nobody's gonna hurt anybody. We're all gonna be like three little Fonzies here.
And to Tomalak's credit, he's cool.
Right. I am going to bend over and pick up the soap now. You stay over there.
Yeah.
I need this soap.
I am going to reach into the glove compartment and take out the registration for my car.
Yeah, exactly.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
The episode ends with sort of crisis averted. Tomalak does not choose to light up the Enterprise.
Right.
Picard beams Backroom and Geordi directly to the bridge, both of whom are just totally filthy.
Yeah, like, they get a lot of poopy on the bridge.
They're the kids who played in the mud puddle and then walked around inside tracking mud all over the carpet. Like,
totally.
They're a filthy mess.
How lucky does Picard feel that the transporter beam didn't scoop up some of the ground material like it did with those space Irish?
Yeah, no kidding. So, the very end of the episode, Backroom and Geordi are on the bridge. Tomalak sees this. Tomalak is satisfied that a survivor is on his way back to his own ship. Picard is satisfied that Geordi's alive, and they might have brokered a strange peace in the process.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of goodwill at the end of the day.
Picard is like, Worf, take Backroom and Geordi to the transporter room, and then the episode ends.
Right.
I wanted to be in that lift, man. I wanted to be in the turbo lift.
Right.
Because you had... a half an hour of Worf's inner conflict where he's just hating Romulans and he lets one die on his watch. And there was at least 3 minutes of what does Worf do when he finds out that one of them saves the life of one of his buds on the crew.
Right.
We don't get that extra moment that I thought would have been really great for his character.
Yeah, like if Tarantino had written that moment, Worf would have like lorded the death of the guy's comrade over him.
Right.
If, I don't know, I feel like if Spielberg had directed it, it would have been kind of like Worf having a really like emotional like realization that he needs to not be such a racist.
Yeah. Man, like a 30-second turbo lift ride, and then we watch him beam away, and that's when the credits roll. I think that would have been a great button. But as it was like, good job. Welcome to the transporter room. And then we're out. It was so close to being great.
Yeah.
And that sort of drove me crazy.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's not your fault, Ben.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Ben.
Did you find a drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda.
I don't know if I've ever asked you, have I?
I don't think you've ever asked. I'm really off balance by the question. Drunk Shimoda is a recognition we give a character in every episode who is acting the most like an inebriated baby. In this episode, I am bestowing that great honor on Worf because it just seemed so much more in keeping with his character that instead of letting him die, he would have given that dying Romulan the fuck you of injecting his blood into him.
Yeah.
Like, that is the ultimate fuck you. Like, this guy has to live the rest of his life knowing that my creepy Klingon blood is in him. Like,
right.
That just seems like the more badass of the moves. And that seems to be that's a level of revenge I would assume that Worf has, that he'd be perfectly fine with.
Totally.
And so that kind of surprised me. So I'm going to give it to Worf. Like, I feel like he could know better in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
And not only that, he gets on the good side of Beverly and Picard and everyone else who's trying to twist his arm into doing it. Like, not only does he get to satisfy the guilt trips of everyone around him, he gets ultimate revenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
I'm kind of right there with you. I guess I had Geordi written down just for, like, a couple of the times when he got a little whiny on the planet surface, but I think you're probably right that Worf is in fact the drunk Shimoda.
Well, the thing about drunk Shimoda is there is no right or wrong answer.
No, I think that every time we are both right.
Sure.
And I think you're more right this time. I don't want to be wrong.
Geordi really, I mean, there are a couple of aliens parallels in this episode. One of them is the LV-426 description, which was perfect by you. And the other one is Geordi's sort of slow spiral into the Hicks character.
Sure. Like
when yeah. Shit really goes down.
Game over, man.
I think he's ready to give up.
Yeah.
Not only that, like he's ready to give up when he goes blind. He also tells the Romulan that he can't really think of a situation where he'd be willing to die rather than be captured.
Yeah.
He's a little mealy-mouthed about that, too.
Fair.
I've got questions about his commitment to the Federation.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscapes.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscapes.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or
trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself? No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
I am Locutus of Borg. You are Borg.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
What do we have coming up for our next episode?
Our next episode is Season 3, Episode 8, The Price. Counselor Troy is swept off her feet by a dashing delegate that uses unethical methods to conduct his business on board the USS Enterprise. I have no idea what that even means.
Yeah, I don't either. This is one of those episodes that's just been completely erased from my mind.
I mean, like, the descriptions, like I don't remember there being an episode about that. What the fuck?
I feel like maybe for once a season, someone gets on board the ship that does weird mind shit to Troy.
Yeah,
either she's tormented by ice cream truck music, or like, I remember one guy with like a weird forehead mask, like who would come to her in dreams and just sort of torment her.
Yeah, and it was like a rape metaphor, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's this episode or not, but it seems like there's always one a season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that this might be that episode. Who knows? But yeah, gross.
Yeah, have to watch it.
All right.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Did you know that this episode and every other episode is brought to us by the generous donations from listeners, like the ones that are listening to us right now?
I did know that. It is a totally non-trivial amount of work that we put into this every week. Like, we record 2 episodes a week. It's like we spend a lot of time editing and hunting down clips, and the support of our listeners really makes us feel like that's worthwhile. Like, it feels so good to have everybody out there listening that is enthusiastic enough about what we're doing to support it financially. So everybody that does that, huge high five from us.
If you feel like joining those listeners, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate. You can also talk to us on the Twitters using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime, and Ben is over there as @BenjaminR, A-H-R.
There's a Greatest Gen subreddit and a Maximum Fun subreddit, both of which are real fun. You can also go on Facebook. There's a page and a group for The Greatest Generation, and those are real lively places as well. We just have great listeners who talk about the show everywhere they can.
People are making bumper stickers, they're making songs, they're making videos.
Yeah.
We had a great video that got sent to us today, the This Old Enterprise video.
Yeah, that was so good.
That was awesome. You throw away a bit in an episode, and you think that that's just going to be what it is, and then it has a life of its own. It's awesome.
Yeah, so cool. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Dark Materia for our music. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and also a very unethical episode of The Greatest Generation.
Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
With that, we will be back at you next week with... We will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. We will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and also a very unethical episode of The Greatest Generation.
I think between those three takes at the end,
I think you've got enough to put something together.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.